Hello, welcome to this edition of the Bearcats Blogcast. My name is Scott, joined by Chris Baines. How's it going, Chris?
Oh, Scott, I am doing fantastic. UC is 4-0. UC came back from sheer death against Ohio, down 24-7 at halftime, roared back to a 34-30 win to go 4-0. Scott, you watched the game. You have thoughts? Why don't you share those with the people?
I think just, like, looking at what the win, like, encapsulated, it, like, this is, like, the beginning of the new era. It's, like, it seems like we're finally out of, like, the darkness part of this whole, like, Tuberville era and year one of the Fickle era where they were not really good. Because, like, I guess if you wanted to be a pessimist, you could say they haven't beat anybody good. But at the same time, down 21-0, down 24-7 at halftime, like a gigantic third quarter to get back in the game, take a late lead, and then the defense makes a play, an interception at the goal line to ice the win, being just dramatic all the way around. And it's a game they definitely would have lost the last 2 years.
Oh, absolutely. And I think Your key point there is totally right. Like we're finally seeing the turnaround really start to accelerate. It's to the point where the Tuberville Dark Ages are behind us. Fickle's program and his mentality and everything that he wants to get out of his players, he's getting. Like we talked about this team last year. They fought tooth and nail to the end of every single football game. Now, they would be down by 7 or they could be down by 27, and they were still fighting near the end of that game or those games. Now we're starting to see the fact that they have that never-say-die mentality, and they're taking that, and it's resulting in wins. And we saw that on Saturday. Hell, they were down 21-0 and won that game by 4. The last time UC did that was the infamous UC Pitt game in 2009 to send them to the Sugar Bowl. Outstanding performance by this team. I could not be happier with how they came back and won that game. I do have a few concerns which we can get to, but there's just so much positivity coming out of that game.
But even like adding on like all the other circumstances to this, like down 30-21 in the very early part of the fourth quarter, like they come right down the field, have like a touchdown drive, like that sets the course, and like all the penalties. I'm interested to see the last time they won where they had 14 penalties, 150 penalty yards. It's like unreal.
They had 3 roughing the passer penalties on one drive. How does that happen? Terrible, terrible refereeing. I think everyone can agree on that. There was a couple where he was getting pushed down very lightly. The UC defender maybe somewhat touched the quarterback, but just the fact that the quarterback fell on the ground, it was an instant roughing the passer penalty. There wasn't any driving into the turf. There wasn't any helmet to helmet. There wasn't any going helmet under the chin. It was just a couple of pushing downs like the UC defender was holding off, and horrible refereeing in that game. But that, go ahead.
I think that one was roughing the passer, then personal foul after a sideline warning, then another terrible roughing the passer, like on 3 straight plays. It was like unbelievable, especially the last roughing the passer, which, like you said, like first one was questionable towards like the side where it wasn't a penalty. The last one, it was like the guy pushed the quarterback and he sold it, like it was terrible. Like then like the other end, Ohio play, it was really sloppy too. Like the officiating was just god awful. I thought the entire game, like, you could cut it both ways. It was really bad. And that was, like, the...
Oh, you can absolutely say the first... No, go ahead.
Just because, like, in terms of penalties, like, we see how the team melt down, like, so many times in the last couple of years. And, like, those meltdowns seemed like they would just carry over and bury the team. But go ahead with the rest of your point.
Well, to your point about the fact that they cut both ways, I mean, I will... Say Ohio would not have a 24-7 advantage at halftime if not for those penalties. We just described the single drive where they had something like 45, 50 penalty yards in a single drive. That being said, in the second half, UC was aided by a few questionable penalties on Ohio's end as well. It cuts both ways, but it just cements the fact that officiating on Saturday on both sides was just god awful, just terrible.
Because like as you mentioned, like that one drive like boosted Ohio's whole drive. It's like I believe one of them came on a third down where like Ohio was going to get off the field, and they kept their drive alive.
Yeah, I mean, officiating aside, the resiliency of this team to never say die. Like I don't know what Fickell told them at halftime. I imagine it was something along the lines of ignore the refs, ignore the score, ignore everything outside of your control, and focus on your job. And they responded in a big way. The 3rd-and-12 touchdown pass to Medeiros was beautiful. You come out of halftime, UC does have the football, and they get stuffed on 1st and 2nd down. And you're staring at a 3rd-and-12, and you're thinking, oh, shit, now it's going to spiral, and now we're going to see 2017 all over again. And then Desmond Ridder identifies a perfect cover one, where Medeiros is one-on-one coverage with a single high safety, and he hits him perfectly on a 77-yard touchdown. And it was just the bear catch from there. And I could not be more happy with how that second half played out. I have yet to watch the game again. I definitely will, but I'm going to start it after the second half. I'll say that.
I think the performance from Ridder in the first half and Ridder in the second half was almost night and day. In the first half, it seemed like he was missing a lot of the throws that
absolutely
opened up some of the big plays. And like they just left a lot on the field. In the second half, you mentioned, bam, right off the bat, the big bomb. And then his touchdown pass to Jason Jackson was another like really nice throw.
Nice touch, yeah.
And like a nice catch by Jackson. And it's like everybody stepped up that second half. And like Warren had a monster second half. And it's like really started getting it going. And like that confidence is like really something we haven't seen from a UC team in a while. It's like they had no doubt they were going to win. And like they made a ton of plays. And we can't like negate the defense. On the other side, they held Ohio to a 30-yard field goal in the second half, 25-yard field goal in the first half, not a 25-year-old field goal, a 25-yard field goal, and like those were the turning points of the game. Ohio scores a touchdown on one of those, like that's a bigger hole in the first half, and in the second half, that's like another like bigger deficit that you have to face. I was trying to see when they scored it, it would have been 31-14. It's like you're looking at a 3-score hole instead of 27-14, which they were able to come back from.
Yeah, and when you're talking about, like you mentioned this a couple of weeks ago, the swag on defense is something that was impressive to see and is something we've seen all season. Saturday was when you started to see the swag on offense. Like, you know, they beat Alabama A&M to shit, but who cares? It was Alabama and A&M. You and I could have gone out there against 11 of their defenders and probably put up a couple of touchdowns. But the ability to come out on the field and have the mentality that you know you're going to get into the end zone on that drive and you will it into the end zone if you have to, Michael Warren on a couple of those touchdowns, is the kind of mentality that we've been missing from this offense for several years. And we knew it was on defense. We've seen it on defense all year. It's so encouraging and refreshing to see it on offense as well. The post-game quotes of Desmond Ridder, of people quoting Desmond Ridder, they were saying he had no doubt in his mind that he was going to lead them to a victory. Like down 24, down 54, it didn't really matter. He had everyone's, it was in everyone's ear, letting them know that he was going to lead them to a win. And goddamn, he's a redshirt freshman. We have three more years than him, and I cannot wait.
Yeah, his like maturation is becoming really exciting to watch, because it just seemed like they didn't feel they were going to lose, and like I seemed like I don't know. I wasn't watching the game like live with Twitter. But I couldn't have been the only one nervous when Ohio like was driving back down at the end. But like they believed they were going to make a play, and like they made a play. And the defense like really improved the second half as well. It's like Ohio seemed to control the ball the entire first half. Even when they didn't score, it was like they just drove down and drove the clock the entire half. Then their longest drive in the second half was 4 minutes, and it ended up with a punt.
Yeah, I mean, let's put the officiating aside for a moment. The defense probably could have gotten off the field a few more times than they did in the first half had the officials not gifted first down to Ohio. I mean, let's put that aside. They had some terrible tackling in the first half. Nathan Rourke ran all over them. He was slippery. He was slipping out of tackles left and right. I don't know if that was more Rourke or just the defense couldn't get a hold of him. It was a little slippery that day. There was a light mist in the air. Their main running back, Ouellette, was running all over them. I don't know if it was what was going on there in terms of how they were tackling, but I mean, Ohio had no issues in the first half running all over them. The second half, much better all over the place.
It seemed like in the first half, Ohio was really taking advantage of UC being so aggressive and overcommitting.
Yes, that was it.
I believe on one of the touchdowns, I think it was the one Rourke had his rushing touchdown. It was a busted play. Everybody went with a running back, and he had pretty easy, easy run. It was like unbelievable to watch. And then, like, the second half, they started, like, being aggressive, but also not leaving their stations, not leaving their spots, and they were able to step up and make more plays and force Rourke to throw the ball, which it seemed like Ohio didn't want him to do, and for good reason, because he wasn't, like, really great through the air. But, like, as you said, like, running the ball, like, they had no problems the entire game. Like, I think that's going to be the biggest issue, like, coming up the rest of the season, is, like, Ohio schemed them really well. 5 yards a carry, 234 yards. Like, that's just something that you know everybody else is going to watch, and everybody else is going to be trying to get you to be too aggressive and shift the defense. And there's enough good offenses in this league where, like, you can see some shootouts going, like we just witnessed.
Yeah, I think Brian Wright had an okay game in the linebacker position. That whole second level was missing Perry Young the entire game. I mean, like you said, the defensive line was pinning their ears back and getting into the backfield quite a bit, but they schemed to play into that over-aggression very well in the first half. But that second level of the linebacker core, Brian Wright had an okay game. He was fine, but he wasn't that impact stopper at the second level that I was hoping he would be, and they sorely missed Perry Young in that first half. I mean, I fully believe if he was in that game, those 9, 10, 12-yard runs by Ouellette is stuffed by 3 or 4 yards. I totally agree. I think that's going to be something that we see from opposing offenses in the coming weeks, but they got to get Perry Young back at some point.
Yeah, definitely, because it seemed like linebacker was the spot in particular where Ohio was really like making those guys have to work and have to make the reads. And for the first half, they really didn't do a great job of it. Like, it seemed like Ohio just ran some version of the option like the entire first half. And if it wasn't like Ouellette or Rourke, it was Irons had like a nice game, 64 yards on 12 carries. I kind of wondered why they didn't get him more involved. Like, the positive part is, like, they came together and were able to stop Ohio at least from rushing so much in the second half. And they were able to, like, bottle up Ouellette a lot of the second half as well.
Yeah, it was definitely a Jekyll and Hyde kind of game. And, you know, it's one of those growing opportunities we see with this team. I mean, we kind of talked about this last week. I mean, Ohio could potentially have been that litmus test we were waiting for. You know, statistically, the defense wasn't that strong, but, I mean, this was definitely the best offense that they faced. And when you're facing a head coach like Frank Solich, who's seen everything in the sport 3 or 4 times over, he's going to understand how to scheme against an aggressive UC defense. And we saw that on Saturday. And UC being able to see that and read it and react and adjust, and that's the kind of thing you need to see from a football team over the course of a season, because this isn't going to be the first time they face a solid and prolific offense. And they got Central Florida coming up. Kenny Amatololo's offense is gonna try to take advantage of an over aggressive defense with their option pitch. You got Tulane in a couple of weeks. I mean, there's gonna be a lot of offenses that they're gonna face that they can't just over blitz and over rush and get beyond the quarterback in the back. And that's going to be – this is the learning experience that could produce more and more wins down the road. Who knows if they had come out and throttled Ohio 50-7 or something like that, if they would have had that same experience. I think the fact that they had to overcome adversity is going to produce more wins down the road than if they had come out and beaten them to shreds.
Yeah, I think that's actually a good point. Just like in the sense that, like, it would have been great to win that big. But it seemed like they hadn't really done, like UCLA, like, made a push them quite a bit. Like, the last 2 weeks, they really had no challenge. And, like, you need things, especially when you start to ramp up to conference play. And, like, with, like, all the talk about how much they've, like, improved, sometimes it's, like, good to get a reminder that, like, hey, you played a couple of bad teams. Like, don't get too much in your head.
But, like, yeah, and I think that's the thing. Is, like, yeah, they played some bad teams, and we didn't really understand what this team was until Saturday. And it's encouraging what we saw coming out of it. Go ahead.
I forgot what I was going to say. You take the reins.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm terrible. I'm sorry. You can talk for the next 30 seconds unopposed.
Oh, great. So I had, like, nothing to talk about, and you just, like, threw the ball in my court.
I was giving you the opportunity, okay? I was giving you the opportunity. Okay, so thoughts on the Ohio game. I feel like, I don't know, they're 4-0. I still don't think 8-0 down the stretch is improbable. I think they can go 8. I think they can probably win the next 4 games. Temple's looking a lot better recently, but man, that was a great come from behind performance that I don't know. I don't feel like this team is going to collapse down the stretch.
Yeah, I think the really encouraging thing is, like, how kind of the schedule shook out, where, like, you see, like, it's not, like, great, but, like, they're really improving, and, like, their defense, I'm just looking at the ESPN rankings, their defense in the advanced rankings is 24th. If you have a unit, top 25 unit in this league, you're going to have a lot of success. And most of the time, it's been offenses that have been top 25 units. I believe both Florida schools had top 25 units last year. Like, Houston's, when they were good, their offense ranked really highly. As did Navy. Like, Temple was, like, the lone exception, like, when they won the league with their defense. But if you have a really strong unit, the league is definitely there for the taking. Like, UC does have, like, a really tough challenge at the end of the year against Central Florida. But, like, I don't think you can look at any of the games, like, coming up and really be, like, thinking that's going to be a loss. Like, they can be toss-ups. But I think we're really out of, like, the range where, like, you just look at a game and it looks like a loss. Which is really nice after the last few seasons of only 4 wins.
Yeah, UC has something like a 10% chance, according to S&P Plus, of losing 0 or 1 games. I'd put money on that. I don't know if I'd get my money back, but you're right. Having an elite level defense, or just an elite level couple of units on the team, a defensive line, a linebacker core, an offensive line, etc. I mean, that's going to put them in the running for several of these games. I mean, we're looking so far ahead. I mean, the main challenges on the schedule coming up are going to be like the South Florida, the Central Florida you mentioned. But I can't imagine they're going to be more than a touchdown dog in any of those games. They could be even a favorite against South Florida down the stretch. You never know. I mean, that one's at home.
Yeah, and with, like, how weird South Florida has been, it's hard to, like, bank on. I think it would be hard for it to, like, bank on them winning on the road. And Navy just, like, lost another road game. We'll probably get to them later, like, in more detail. Like, another, like, loss on the road, like, where they look amazing at home and terrible on the road. Like, that does make SMU look, like, a little tougher since, like, they actually won a game.
Right.
But, like, I don't think you can compare this team to SMU and think, oh, that's definitely a loss. It's like when they went to South Florida last year, like, that was definitely a loss.
Yeah. Yeah, you knew what the team was last year. They were mediocre in a lot of areas and not great at really anything except for punting, which, I mean, James Smith is the great punter, but he's not going to have that much of an impact on the game. And now you're looking at a squad that might have the best defensive line in the league. one of the best in the country. They've got a quarterback and a passing game that finally woke up and has proven that they can stretch the field. Who knows what this team can do over the course of the season? I don't know if we're going to learn more about this team against UConn. I mean, I think when we get to that preview, I don't know if we're going to really think that it's going to be that much of a challenge. I mean, it is on the road, and I always hate playing in stores because UC has had some of the weirdest games ever in stores. But if this team is what they are, an elite-level defense, they've got an offensive line that can grind out, that can help the running backs grind out 100 to 150 yards on the ground. Desmond Ridder has proven that he has the ability to hit open receivers in stride, deep downfield. The sky's the limit for this team.
I absolutely agree with you. I think the most impressive thing that they've done, like, and they've done it all season, is like win third downs. Like, just looking at the national stats and like third down percentage, they're 28th offensively and 35th defensively. It seemed like last season they couldn't convert third down to save their lives, and this season they convert anything short, it seems. And they showed like the propensity to hit the big like third and longs, like with that long touchdown pass in this game. And they really, like, you can like make the case, like, look at the terrible teams they've played. I guess Ohio would be one of them. Like, their advanced stats are very low. But, like, once they started getting Ohio off the field on third down, like, the offense was able to get better field position and get drives going. And flipping field position is something they've done, I think, very well this season.
Yeah, it's so hard to look at that game as a whole just because of all the wonky, weird things that happened in the first half. You know, without Rourke slipping out of a few wild and crazy tackles in the backfield and throwing the ball away and hitting receivers in stride while he's almost like an inch off the ground, there's a few sacks there. Without the penalties on the refs doing whatever they think they're doing, there's a couple of sacks there. You know, Ohio was, like we talked about, Ohio was up 24-7. It could very well have been like 14-7 or 10-7. Like, the defense in the second half looked more like what they've seen all season, and that first half of the game seems like an outlier. And if it's the case that they're going to go up against like a Central Florida or a South Florida down the road, I think you're right. I think they got the ability to pull off the upset and keep them in check if they need to.
It's the only team like they're not favored to beat, at least on these ESPN, like, what is it, FPI rankings, is Central Florida. Like, Temple and South Florida are 57.9 and 58%. So, like, those two are in the toss-up zone. Like, all the rest, like, UC is pretty significant favorite. It's like the chance to win the league is out there. So it only takes Central Florida maybe one loss to lose the league, and it could be to UC.
Yeah, and all of a sudden the West actually doesn't look too strong. Like, I don't know, Navy, I don't know what they're doing. We're going to talk about this a little bit in a while. I mean, they lost to SMU. You know, granted, the final play, and I don't know if you saw it, it was just a weird two-point conversion situation that shouldn't have been or something, and Navy lost the game. The point is, the Navy should never have been in a game with SMU. It should never have come down to that. Houston's proven themselves to be vulnerable defensively. Memphis has a weird loss to Navy on the schedule and gave up a ton of points to South Alabama last week. You know, UC winds up winning the East somehow. I don't know if the West is necessarily the stronger division. I don't know. Coming into the season, I always thought Memphis was the favorite to win. Now I think it's Central Florida with, you know, South Florida or Cincinnati as a potential dark horse now. The West just doesn't look that good.
And we get a Central Florida game at Memphis later this season, which is going to be really interesting. So if Central Florida loses that game, the door for Cincinnati to, like, maybe sneak out with the East title is really there. It's like some of the games they lost last year, they play at home. like Navy, they lost at Navy, they lost at East Carolina. Getting those two games at home,
mm-hmm.
it, like even if like Navy gets better, so you'd much rather play Navy at home than play Navy on the road.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you just kind of you saw it last year. Maybe just because we're talking about a 2017 team and versus a 2018 team that looked completely different. Going to Annapolis just puts teams out of sorts, it seems like. And, yeah, getting Navy on the road is definitely going to put, like, UC in advantage. We talked about this earlier before the season. I mean, the fact that they do get South Florida and Navy at home is going to be huge for their chances of boosting that win total with teams that they might have lost to if we're talking about this team last season. I just have all positivity right now. I don't know what else to say. I feel like this team's still going to go 8-0. At least.
Yeah, it's like now we're looking at a scenario where like even like you could throw out 7-1, 8-0, and it's all feasible. And it seems like it should happen. Like to be honest, because you could argue that. Like, all these teams coming up, even, like, including Navy, like, all teams that are around the similar ranges that they've already played. Like, UCLA still ranks the best in the advanced stats, and they went there and kind of beat UCLA handily. And so most of these games, as we mentioned, at home, like, SMU, it's, like, not really great, but Temple is looking a lot better. So that's going to be a tough game at Temple, but that's in 3 weeks. So you have a lot of time to prepare for that type of game. And with like how this team's playing and how like Ritter's progressed and how it seems like everybody's stepped up. Like we like talked about the receivers a couple weeks ago, and they all like most of them all had like big games against Ohio.
Yeah, it's they're sitting at 63rd overall at S&P Plus. That seems about right. Like you mentioned, they got a top 50 top 50 defense, which sounds about right. They've got a top 8, they got a top 90 offense, so they're 87th offense. They haven't really moved offensively, which kind of makes sense. I mean, like you mentioned, the schedule has played out to a point, or the schedule up to this point has been fairly cupcakey. Like there's been some assy teams on that schedule. Like UCLA isn't what anybody thought they were. Miami is horrible again. They had Alabama and A&M. Ohio was the only real team that they faced, and they were more known for offense. I mean, we saw when UC was able to get into a rhythm in the second half, they scored it pretty much at will on Ohio. I would hope that offense kind of climbs up to like the 70s or 60s at some point down the road. I mean, we saw kind of highlights over the last couple of weeks, and I guess we're just going to have to wait until probably like Temple to figure out if this offense is really capable of scoring on a decent defense. The UC defense, I have no issue with. I mean, they, like you said, they're a top 50 defense. We've seen time and time again that they have the capabilities of shutting down opposing offenses. It's really the Bearcats offense that's really going to hold this team back or propel them forward going into the rest of the season.
Yeah, definitely, because that's where the major question marks still are. We saw like some issues with the offensive line that we didn't see in the last few games. Where Ohio, like when they blitzed, they were able to get Ritter out of the pocket, and, like force him to make the throws he didn't seem like he was terribly comfortable with. And like as Jack, the talent you go against improves, because like you can definitely argue like Temple, like I would even say like, pretty much everybody besides UConn, like maybe Tulane. I don't really know how Tulane's been recruiting, but like all of those teams have better talent than Ohio. And Ohio, like, gave them a really strong fight. And, like, the one thing we did talk about in the preview was Ohio's going to come out and, like, punch him in the mouth. And that's exactly what they did.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, in a sense, it was good that they were able to, like, withstand that blow and win. But, like, yep. The fact, like, you get dealt a 14-point hole in the first quarter, like, it's not exactly encouraging. And, like, that would be the biggest, like, negative takeaway that I would say. It's like you fell behind 21 points to a team that's probably not going to make a bowl game. It's like that's something that they have to fix up. And like the good news is you pretty much play like a road game, like a freebie against UConn.
No, that's, I think that's totally accurate. Yeah, UConn is, if we're going to make that transition, UConn is just fucking awful. Like, they're a defensive-focused team that can't play defense. Like, they rank 130th in yards per game at 664 yards allowed per game. That's 120 yards higher than the second worst team in football, which was Ohio. Like, UC had no problem scoring on Ohio in that second half. I have no doubt in my mind that they're going to put up something like 40 points against UConn on Saturday. I don't know, weather permitting or whatever, or just the wonkiness of having to play in stores, but I don't know how UC doesn't score points in bunches against this UConn team.
Yeah, I really don't either, especially since UConn lost their offensive coordinator, and it doesn't seem like their offense has been, like, that great. Like, outside of the explosion they had against Rhode Island, they've been really handled, like, the three games they've played against, like, good teams. Granted, the three teams that they've played, like, I'll say Syracuse is good. For the sake of this,
Syracuse is actually good this year, which is yeah.
three high-profile offenses, like all three, put at least 51 on them. Even Rhode Island put 49 on UConn. That's like insane. It was like the chance for putting up big points is there, and like, I guess there is a chance you could end up in a shootout since like UConn's quarterback does have like nice numbers, like 796 yards, 7 touchdowns, 3 picks for Pindle. And that you kind of pushed them to the limit last season, the extra point being like missed at the end of regulation. But it seems like this UC team is different, and this UConn team is different for other reasons.
Yeah, Pindle's actually, I think he's actually a pretty good player. I mean, he's legit. He can play the position. The problem is he can't play running back, and he can't play receiver at the same time that he's playing running or quarterback. It's just one of those typical UConn situations where they have one or two good players and nothing else anywhere else on the field. Like, they don't have any receivers Pindle can throw to, so he has to do everything. And unfortunately, if you're an offensive coordinator or a quarterback coach, you can't rely on just the quarterback to do everything. That's just not how it works. Like, UC's defense, I imagine Marcus Freeman's going to look at this game tape and just be like, all right, let's just get somebody to key in on David Pendle and let the defensive line tee off. And that's all they're really going to do. I think there could be a situation kind of like we talked about with Ohio where we could see like with Nathan Rourke or like what we saw with Nathan Rourke where he would slip out of the pocket and scramble for a first down. I think that could be a situation on Saturday, but I don't know if that's going to be a game-changing part of this, and that's going to be a situation where Pindle actually causes UC to fall over themselves to the point where they're threatening the Bearcats 17-point favorite in this game. So I don't know. I'm kind of to the point where I feel like UC is going to win this one like 40-20 or 47-20, something in that range. I know I was as confident about that against Ohio at home, but I don't know. UConn's just so bad in so many areas.
Exactly. They've been like so terrible. Where even if like Pindle has a nice game, then like he's had a couple of nice games. Like he leads their team in rushing. Like obviously, quarterback, and he leads their team in passing yards. Like his performance like really wasn't that great against Syracuse. It's like the chance there to like shut down their offense, or at least keep their offense in check, is right there, and it seems like they should have no problem in scoring. I don't know if I would hit the 40-point mark, but I think they could definitely score like 35, 38 points on UConn easily, and get like a 38 to like 10 win, something in that range.
Yeah, Pindle definitely padded his stats against Rhode Island. He threw for 319 yards, 4 touchdowns. Outside of that game, he's something like 500 yards and 3 touchdowns to 3 interceptions, or to 2 interceptions, which, you know, not great. And granted, you know, you're talking about stiff competition against Central Florida, Boise State, and Syracuse, but, it, you know, UC has as good, if not better, defenses in those three teams from what they've shown up until this point. I don't know if Pindle's going to have a breakout game this you know, on Saturday.
But you could even like use the UCF game as like a type of like corollary, where he had like a nice quarter, but like they were already down like 21 points when he put up his stats in that game. It's like even if like he plays well, like the key is like to getting the offense going, and like getting like Ritter going and Warren going, and like then hopefully you can see some of these other guys too, like getting opportunities, because the Ohio game, it was all Warren on the ground, him and Riddle. And so, like, Ritter, I think I said Riddle. But you like to see some of the other backs, like, at least chip in. So he's not carrying the whole burden, like a fourth week out of five.
Yeah, for sure. And it doesn't sound like, I mean, maybe Dokes is going to be back this week. Who the hell knows? But, yeah, I think on Saturday, once they started to get DeGuara out in space, they had a lot of nice success in the second half. They've got to figure out those kinds of ways to just not lean on Mike Warren just running up the middle and the offensive line creating opportunities for him. I mean, you're right. They've got to figure a way to get the ball into space and use more weapons. Like just get Ritter's shown that he can utilize those weapons to a high degree and get a good outcome out of it. Continue to let him open up the offense like that.
And I think we will, because you mentioned DeGuara, and like he had like a really great game. Like his development like, kind of has come out of nowhere, where like they've really gotten the tight end involved for the first time in like a large number of years, at least involved this consistently, where he's been like they're almost their top receiver so far.
And it's not like they're like when Travis Kelce was on the team, they use him in kind of more of that wide receiver, trying to split the safety's role over the middle, or just trying to get quick outlet pass at the first down marker. I mean, they're getting DeGuara out in the flat and getting in the ball and allowing him to truck over defensive backs if he needs to, or scramble for a first down. And that's something that's really interesting to see that they found so much success out of, because usually you see those kinds of plays only go for like 3 or 4 yards, and they're getting like first downs pretty consistently out of that play. I don't know if that's going to eventually come back down to earth when defensive coordinators start to key in on that. But I mean, for now, it's working.
And it seems like one of those things that should continue working as they keep playing like these kind of like subpar defenses.
Mm-hmm.
Like you mentioned earlier, like by S&P, like two of the worst defenses in the country back to back. That's going to make your offensive numbers look nice. It probably will hold them back a little in the computer rankings.
Yeah.
Because they adjust for opponent. But like yard wise, they should have another big yard game. And I don't know, I'm thinking that they just come out and take care of business. The fourth quarter is like an easy quarter. I think UConn could like maybe give them trouble for a half. But
yeah.
I don't know. I just can't buy UConn like keeping this game any kind of close.
Yeah, I agree. I think it could be a situation of the first half, first quarter, where UConn makes it interesting. They keep it within a couple of touchdowns. But yeah, that program is just a mess right now. Like you mentioned, the offensive coordinator left for SMU last year. Randy Edsall apparently walked out of his press conference today when he was getting questioned about the defensive coordinator because they're doing such dog shit on that side of the ball. Like, there's so many underlying issues.
Yeah, apparently he wasn't even really asked about his defensive coordinator, like straight up.
So do you have any other thoughts about the game?
No, I do have thoughts about the Edsall thing. Apparently he wasn't even asked about, like, the coordinator per se. Somebody asked him about how Wake Forest changed their coordinator, then he got mad and, like, stormed out.
Well, I mean, a leading question, so he kind of got that. That's pretty great. I need to go watch that. Yeah, do you have any other thoughts about this game, or should we wrap up the AAC this week?
No, I don't have any other thoughts. It's like hard to come up with thoughts about like UConn football.
Yeah, and who really? I mean, let's minimize talking about UConn football. I mean, that's just going to put us in a sad place.
Who do you think the offensive breakout performer is going to be in this game? I would say last game it was Medeiros. The first game was Warren. I guess the Miami game you could say it was Ritter. Then the Alabama A&M game it was like the two young backs. So it's been a different guy every week stepping up. So who do you think is going to do it this week?
Let's let Khalil Lewis have a game. I feel like he deserves one. One of the lone seniors on the receiving corps, if not the only one. Yeah, let's let him get like 150 yards and a couple of touchdowns.
I'm gonna go the other side. I'm gonna go with Geddes. Seems like he hasn't done anything since like he caught the season opening, like or the home opening touchdown pass. So I think he's gonna have a couple touchdowns. He may not put up the yards, but I'm going two touchdowns for Geddes.
Okay, no, that's. I think we both agree he's going to be receivers. I think Mike Warren's going to still have a pretty damn good game. I think there's no way he's going to get more than 100 yards against that defense. But yeah, I think it's going to be one of the receivers putting up a bunch of video game like numbers, and I'm hoping it's Lewis.
Yeah, I hope it's both of them, because like Warren is definitely going to get his yards. Like
sure, let's just 700 yards of offense, 60 points. Let's just pencil that in.
I think the most impressive thing about Warren, like even the last game, 124 yards, zero lost yards. He always goes forward. He's like been such like a joy to watch this year.
He has, yeah. I am getting I'm still a little concerned about his wear and tear because every single one of his runs are up the middle against contact. Someone in some statistician there can probably tell me one way or the other, but I feel like every single one of his plays ends with him either running into the end zone or getting tackled by a bunch of defenders. It's never really one where he just kind of scampers out of the sidelines because he's not that sideline to sideline back. And I think that's a little bit concerning going into the rest of the season. We talked about this a couple of weeks ago. Even if Dokes is out for a couple of weeks more, they can still lean on McClelland and Tadeon Thomas if they need to, but it's just something to kind of keep an eye on with Warren.
Especially since that toll would start taking, or the yards would start taking its toll at the end of the season. And like when your schedule is the most like loaded and you play the biggest opponents you have, you don't want him to miss like the Central Florida game or the South Florida game.
Right, exactly. Exactly.
Let's move on to this week in the AAC. Recapping real fast, Temple beat Tulsa. The game was on ESPN for some reason.
Did you have Thursday night?
Yeah, the Thursday night ESPN game used to be like gigantic ACC games, and now it's like UConn or Tulsa and Temple.
Temple, Tulsa, Boston College, and Wake Forest. Yeah, it's yeah. It's a sad state of affairs, weeknight games. We need some mashing going.
But another win for Temple. They're 2-2. Seems like they bounced back after their slow start. Seems like they forced Tulsa into like a lot of turnovers. Do you have like any big takeaways from this game from Temple's side since UC doesn't play Tulsa?
Yeah, and absolutely, since I 100% watched this game and didn't look away one bit. Temple looks like Temple, I guess. I don't know. We'll see in a couple of weeks.
They did make the change at quarterback to Russo, and he had a really terrible game. 7-20, like two picks, no touchdowns. It's like, if that's going to continue, like you have to be like looking your chops if you're a defensive player.
Yeah, for sure. For sure.
But they still have Armstead, and he's still good. Central Florida beat FAU in a shootout. It looked like for a while this game would be exciting. Then, like, Central Florida was a lot better.
Yeah, not much to really take away of this game. I mean, Central Florida played an FAU team that has given up a bunch of points this year, and they took advantage of it. And I know you mentioned, like, last week, do we think we're going to see Mackenzie Milton of South Carolina A&T or not? And it seems like, yeah, he's back to normal, which is kind of concerning for the rest of the division.
He only combined for 6 touchdowns, which I guess isn't so bad. Tulane went to UC plays next week. Went to Ohio State last week, and they got killed by a lot of points. You have any thoughts about Tulane? Did that performance change your mind?
Nope. Ohio State's a juggernaut, is what it is.
We touched on Navy losing at SMU in overtime, 31-30. Maybe I was too quick to bury SMU was my main takeaway from this game. It seems like they do have some life in there.
I just think Navy's just bad. Every year I always think Navy's can be penciled into about eight wins. Navy's just not very good this year. I don't know. Navy should be a lot better than they're showing.
According to the ESPN schedule thing, they're projected to go 5-8. That's not really great. A down year for Navy, it appears.
Yeah, unfortunately. Unfortunately for the rest of the conference.
I guess it does keep SMU's hopes alive to win the West. We touched on UConn lose Syracuse. South Florida needed a late comeback to beat East Carolina.
What are you doing, South Florida? South Florida should be better than this. What have they done the last couple of weeks?
I don't know. It seems like they're just... I don't know. They're either not that good or they're not that focused.
Yeah, it's weird. Good for UC because they faced them in about a month. But if you're a South Florida fan, that's super concerning the last couple of weeks. They should have blown the East Carolina out of the water.
Instead, they go under 300 yards, only 9 first downs for South Florida. They needed an 80-yard touchdown run to pull away. I don't know. It seems like they have so much talent, but then they've been really hit by the injury bug. But that's no excuse. They should be blowing out East Carolina.
They should be beating East Carolina into the ground. Yeah, for sure.
The last two games, Houston beat Texas Southern by many points. Memphis needed a late comeback. Well, I don't even know if they needed a comeback. They just needed late points to rally past South Alabama.
Yeah, no, I mean, no other thoughts there. I mean, Houston, I think they got exposed defensively by what turns out to be a pretty good Texas Tech team. But, I mean, they can still put a billion points on the board, like you mentioned. They won 70-14. And then Memphis, I don't know, Memphis is a little shaky. They put 52 on the board, which makes sense, but, I mean, they still gave up 35 to South Alabama. I mean, they face a good offense. I don't know. I mean, they got Central Florida on the 13th. That could be an interesting game.
Yeah, giving up 360 yards passing to South Alabama just doesn't inspire confidence when you have to face Mackenzie Milton.
Right, exactly.
Speaking of Memphis, they play the Friday night ESPN2 game. So they go on the road to Tulane. This seems like a game Memphis should handle easily. They're a 2-touchdown favorite. I think
yeah, they should. Yeah, you're right. Go ahead.
I think they'll beat Tulane pretty handily.
I agree. I'm still, like we just said, I'm a little skeptical about that Memphis defense. I think they could allow Tulane to keep it a little close, and Tulane's feisty with that option offense. So yeah, I think it could be relatively close, especially with Memphis going on the road. But I think 2 touchdowns sounds about right.
Another test for Temple. Non-conference game. They go to Boston College, who just got drilled by Purdue. The spread moved a point in Temple's favor, but they're still a 13.5-point underdog. I kind of think Temple is going to cover, and it'll be closer than they think, but Boston College will win.
Yeah, I kind of think so, too. I feel like Boston College has looked really solid this year against lesser competition, but then Purdue completely throttled them last week. But Temple's kind of on the rise, it seems like, and I think you're right. I think they get within about a touchdown, but Boston College is still a tough out.
And going on the road as well, it doesn't seem like Temple's going to do it.
Right.
Interesting challenge for UCF. They play Pittsburgh. UCF another like 13.5 point favorite. After Pittsburgh lost to North Carolina, it just seems like Central Florida should like run past them. It's like another second half tsunami.
Yeah, I feel like if this was on the road, I would be a little concerned about Central Florida. But yeah, it should be something like, yeah, Central Florida should win by a couple touchdowns at least.
I won't be surprised if that game was close at halftime, though.
Yeah. That's true, yeah. I can see that.
East Carolina plays now an interesting game against Old Dominion.
So let's mention this. Go ahead.
After Old Dominion, like, shocked Virginia Tech, like, beat them by 14 points, East Carolina is a 7-point favorite against the Monarchs. Now, it just seems like a really interesting game. Now, like, all of a sudden, like, this game is something to at least keep half an eye on.
Yeah, East Carolina is a touchdown favorite, and I'm a little surprised that it's that high, like, with what ODU was able to do against Virginia Tech last week. I mean, East Carolina, they lost to an FCS team, North Carolina A&T, to start the season. I don't know why they're favored by a touchdown here. I would pick ODU in this game. What do you think?
I think East Carolina's going to win. I mean, Old Dominion lost to some really bad teams before they beat Virginia Tech. It's like East Carolina has to be somewhat better, right?
They don't have to be. They're East Carolina.
And who knows? It could have been East Carolina beating Virginia Tech, but that game was canceled, so we'll never know.
That's true.
But it does like add to the mystery of East Carolina that we talked about a couple of weeks ago, where like they lose to North Carolina A&T, then they beat North Carolina like badly. Like a tough loss at South Florida. Like, are they turning it around, or is this like some sort of mirage? And then they lose to Old Dominion, which would just be kind of hilarious.
Yeah, that is a good point, because, yeah, they've actually played pretty well the last couple of weeks. I mean, if they lose to Old Dominion and lose handily, I mean, all that goes out the window and they're back to the good old East Carolina we like to know and love. But if they beat ODU, I mean, there could be some interesting upsets down the road for them, potentially. They got a real tough schedule, but, I mean, if you're facing East Carolina, I mean, Cincinnati's on that schedule at the end of the season. You got to kind of keep an eye out for them.
Yeah, definitely. Especially since, well, like last year, they just got a roll to East Carolina.
Right, exactly.
Then the final game is Houston Baptist at SMU, which is like a garbage game nobody cares about.
Yeah. But
this is the beginning of the CBS Sportsnet slot for the Bearcats. It's like all their games, it seems the rest of the year, are going to be on CBS Sportsnet.
Yeah, still don't know if you can actually like watch that anywhere. I know YouTube TV has that. I don't even know if they have an app. I think you can watch it online. I don't know. I wish CBS Sportsnet would get their act together and, you know, advance somewhere into the mid-2000s, when mid to late 2000s, when the apps were starting to get developed, but I guess they just want to stay a decade behind everybody else.
Which doesn't really make sense, because you think they would try to, like, get people to watch these games they spend so much money for.
Oh, it's odd. I was talking to Ryan Coslin about this, is that apparently, even though CBS has the ability to stream like March Madness without a problem, they're like completely separate entities from the CBS Sportsnet side of things. Like, everything is different, like technology and resources and all that kind of stuff. And CBS Sportsnet's just, like, struggling to come up to speed. It's just crazy. But, yeah, that's a conversation for a different day.
That actually is interesting, because you think they would be, like, the same branch of the same tree, not a completely different thing. Because CBS is, they've games stream on CBS All Access, so you think it would be the same thing.
You would think. I mean, maybe it's more integrated now, but I mean, as of like a couple of years ago, it was like two different worlds like over there, apparently. So
I think it's still the same thing, because you still see people complaining about it.
Yeah, I'm sure it is. Yeah, do you have any other thoughts about this weekend or the UConn game?
None besides I'm looking forward to another win. I'm looking forward to 5-0.
Yeah. Yeah, me too. 5-0, then 6-0, then 7-0, and then who knows?
that we get very excited and celebrate in the streets.
Make it if possible.